What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Basker with Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution, writing at Defining Ideas. After the court, after the report by the commission charged by the President of the United States to examine complaints about the Supreme Court, now constituted 9 members and said to be 6-3 in favor of the conservatives. So that is a moving number, and it, I will say generally it's complicated. We come now to reforms that are in proportion to some of the complaints about the courts these many years by either side, by all sides. Richard, you focus this on the matter of the term that a justice serves. Right now it's for life, and you tell me the average age for that for life is 30 years. What is to be done, Richard?
Well, if you look to every other court around the world, it turns out that nobody gets life tenure anymore. People have realized that it's just too long a term. You need some rotation in office. You're worried about people becoming genuinely senile or losing some of their powers as they get older. It's not true about everybody. It's only true about some people. But you certainly don't want to have to try to make individual judgments. People are very nervous about asking people to step down when they think they've passed it. Some will do it. Some will not. So what everywhere else is you have this kind of limit. So let me give you an illustration inside the United States. We have Article III judges have lifetime tenure. And it doesn't matter so much when you're talking about courts appeals, but because there's too many judges for anybody to have this kind of decisive position. But when we start creating a specialized court, the uniform practice in the United States is to put together what we call Article I courts, the courts for taxation and bankruptcy, where the terms are around 15 years. And everybody seems to think that this is the far better way to do things, and we cheat a little bit with respect to our constitutional pedigree, noting that we've had them for a very long time, and so therefore they're kind of protected by prescription. Article 1, therefore, sits beside Article 3, and everybody wants to use it. Well, if you see the pattern of behavior with respect to inferior court, see that it works, see that independence is not really compromised, see that the orderly turnover business plus, why not put it into place there? Then why do you pick 18 years? Well, it's got a certain numerical elegance. It means that in the normal case, each president gets 2 nominees that they can make 2 years apart. Obviously, it's going to be scrambled because you have to transition out of the old system. It's also going to scramble because death or resignation before 18 years remains a possibility, so you can't sort of rule that out. But in general, the theory is that if you do this, it becomes more normalized. You're not fighting for quite the enormous stakes that you did before. And it may even help with something which it's much harder to do by way of regulation, which is to improve the temper and the mood and the way in which these confirmation hearings are done. Starting with Bob Bork, with Edward Kennedy saying, Robert Bork's America, all of a sudden everything about these hearings became deeply contested and absolutely vicious inside the Senate, not so much perhaps, but in terms of the outside rhetoric, it became appalling. It turns out you'd like to change this. The difficulty that you have is to try to attack it directly. There's no obvious way in which you can do that. My favorite reform, which I doubt will be adopted, is to say, I don't want the nominee to answer any questions before the committee. The record has to speak for itself. Asking questions is just a game of gotcha. You try to get somebody to say something stupid in response, and what they do is they turn out to be evasive, taking the very sound principle that I don't want to comment on cases that I'm going to have to decide down the road, because pre-commitment is a dangerous way of creating bias. So what happens is, when you want to make reforms, you ask 2 questions. One, will it make a difference? Yes. And then the second question you ask, is it going to erode over time? Anything you want to do, changing muddy procedures will erode. But 18 years is a fixed number. And if you put it in there, it's going to stay for a long time. So the Richard Epstein Constitutional Amendment just has two parts to it. One is you cap the number of Supreme Court justices at 9, so as to put an end to the court packing thing forever. And secondly, you put the 18-year terms in. And that was what I think is the kind of sense of the commission. They didn't talk about a constitutional amendment on the 9 or even on the 18. Though they have to do it for that. But basically what you want to do is to put into place those kinds of things which have some teeth. They can endure and they can make a difference. You never want to put into place something which is going to be constitutional if it departs from standard practice. But there is a worldwide consensus in favor of term limit for judges, which is also expressed in the United States. So given that kind of background, those are the things that they ought to do. And if you read the report, when it starts talking about term limits, the opening shot is everybody seems to be in favor of this on a bipartisan basis. So I think the committee did an excellent job in signaling where it is. Why would you want to move forward with a contentious, probably unwise proposal on court packing when you could actually make a significant difference by introducing a reform that people have talked about for a very long time?
Richard, this would create the conditions, and as we now understand, where a nominee who is in his or her 50s would be retired from the court when in full flower. That is a downside of this. You'd be losing the wisdom of somebody who's mature to give guidance to the whole country in addition to the junior associate justices. I'm just imagining that our ages are going to grow in the coming decades.
This is not a problem to me. You get a fair amount of capital with 18 years, and what happens is you've made a distinctive contribution, and then somebody else comes in. I think a constant turnover on a court like that, slow, methodical, and inexorable, is probably a good thing rather than a bad thing. New York State has always had a 70-year limitation, age limitation on judges, and you get rid of some very fine judges at their peak. But if you put other people in, they'll be just as good, in many cases, maybe even better. There's another element about this, which was constantly raised, make of it what you will, which is that somehow or other, if you've been appointed to the court 30 years ago, you're just really not in tune with the issues of the time. You were raised in a very different context, and the sort of things that you deeply care about have played away and are no longer around. You've got a new set of issues on which these justices find it very difficult to keep up. And so the theory is that if you keep on updating the judges, what will happen is they will be less out of touch with the way in which the nation is moving as a whole. I regard this as a mixed blessing. That's why I say it's a concern, because I don't know how much I want people to be trendy. Walter Burns is famously for saying something like that. He says he doesn't want to keep the Constitution in tune with the times. He wants the times to be consistent with the Constitution, which is an argument in favor of having a greater stability. I don't think there's much downside on that. And when you start looking to other kinds of courts, I think in effect it works pretty well. And I'll add one other thing. After you leave the Supreme Court, it doesn't mean that you're completely inactive. You can still sit on lower courts as a trial judge or as an appellate court judge, and you could write books and you could speak the way, for example, Justice Stevens did before he died. Or you could be more sensible in some ways, like a Sandra Day O'Connor, say, look, I'm not healthy anymore. I'm just going to retire. I've had my day in the sun. Now it's somebody else's turn.
Professor Richard Epstein, writing for Defining Ideas at the Hoover Institution, where he's a senior fellow. He also teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.